Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the second episode of the Force Spike. My name is Ian, and joining me today once again are Terry, and Chuck. So, Cherry. Together, you guys are one big Cherry.
Sasquatch.
Say hi, Terry.
Sasquatch.
And say hi, Chuck.
Hi.
Okay.
I'll take things that'll be edited out in post-op for 200, Alex.
Oh, no, they won't. This is making the real version.
We're doing it live.
All right, so we are back with the second episode, and the first thing we're going to talk to you guys about today is the big news is the Star City Open just happened, and that was our first look at Kaladesh as it comes into Standard. So Chris Van Meter won the event this weekend with Red-White Vehicles. Is a really, really cool deck, and to nobody's surprise at all, there were only about 8,000 copies of Smuggler's Copter, aka Looter Scooter, that made the top 8. As we're looking at the deck, he's got 24 lands in it, 6 mountains, 10 plains, 4 Inspiring Vantage, and 4 Needle Spires. Now, the Inspiring Vantage is a new red-white fast land. 21 dudes, 4 Selfless Spirit, 4 Thraven Inspector, 4 Toolcraft Exemplar, 4 Veteran Motorist, 3 Dipala Pilot Exemplar, and 2 PNLR. 15 spells being 3 Fleetwheel Cruiser, 4 Looter Scooters, 2 Harness Lightnings, 2 Sky Sovereigns, which makes me personally really happy. I love that card. And 4 Declaration Stone. What do you guys think of this deck?
Okay, time out. Before we go on with the 4 Looter Scooters, I think you need to explain to the public what that means and why you call it that.
Okay, so Looter Scooter is the so affectionate name that people have coined for the card Smuggler's Copter. This is a 2 mana artifact. It is a 3/3 with flying. It is crew of only 1, so virtually any creature you can crew with. And whenever Smuggler's Copter attacks or blocks, you can draw a card. And if you do, you discard a card. So you get a loot effect anytime it attacks. Not just deals combat damage to a creature or player, but just when it attacks or blocks. That's fantastic to me. So they call it the Looter Scooter.
Quick question. I'm just wondering what kind of crack addicts they employ at R&D for Wizards that had this card get through and make it think it was balanced.
Bah.
You just kill all the things. No big deal. You got nothing to crew it with, then you don't have to worry about it anymore.
It's like killing infect creatures post combat. They'll never pump it.
On, but seriously, it's not even that, because you can play a creature and then they kill it and you tap it to crew the Looter Scooter. So even creatures that immediately die
get to
scoot and attack.
Because it's Smuggler's Copter ability that is tapping the creature, not the creature itself. So the haste is just completely irrelevant, or the lack thereof haste is completely irrelevant because it's the scooter's ability.
This deck is just very, very well designed. Obviously, from a deck that comes out and crushes the first day. But so much synergy, so many creatures that turn out to have 4 power that cost 1 or 2 mana. It's insane. You've got the Exemplar that when you play it, one of these artifacts, such as, say, the one that Thraven Inspector creates when it comes into play, it'll become a 3/2 when attacking. And then you've got Dipala, which pumps up all the dwarves, which conveniently the Exemplar and the Veteran Motorist are both dwarves. The Veteran Motorist, I don't understand how some of these cards get printed. This is a 3/1 creature for 2, already pretty amazing value. Yes, it also, whenever you crew a vehicle, that vehicle gets +1/+1 bonus value. Exactly where did Scry 2 fit in? I'm trying to understand how they made this card and went, you know what, it's a 3/1 for 2. It makes all your vehicles better. Oh man, it's just not good enough.
It's just those Scry.
I don't know, what ability has nothing to do with aggro creatures? We haven't printed one with Scry 2 before.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, Scry 1's good, obviously. That's fantastic. But you have a choice of putting that at the bottom, keep it at the top. That's really all you've got. Scry 2 is so much better. That is way more than twice as good.
Right.
It's essentially effectively drawing a card. That's how powerful that it is.
I absolutely love that card. The Veteran Motorist is absolutely fantastic. I have absolutely zero things to say bad about it. The only thing, I mean, obviously I can see why it didn't make the deck. But the only thing that, like, really upsets me almost to a point, and it's really just because it's probably my pet card out of the set, is Fairground Warden. Basically, it's the card who's just another Fiend Hunter or Banisher Priest. It's a 1/3 for 3 mana. It's 2 and a white. And it exiles a dude until Fairground Warden leaves. That card has actually been seeing a lot of play in some of these other green-white decks or other red-white decks. And I know that both Tom Ross and Brad Nelson were both playing four ofs in their green-white aggro list over the weekend. So part of me almost would have really liked to have seen that over something like a Pia and Alar. But that's just as I'm sitting here looking at it. I'm sure there's plenty of reasons that Pia and Alar is great for the deck, like curving up from Toolcraft to Exemplar into Veteran Motorist or something like that. And then Pia just gives you another artifact if you need one.
Well, here's actually the, why Pia is in the deck. It's, yeah, it's pure value. It's already a 2-2 for 3 that basically that throws in a Thopter. That's got value to it.
You can sink your mana into the Looter.
You can sink your mana into it, but that's not even that. What's crazy about that is in case somebody ever thought they might actually be able to block something you put into play, you get to sack an artifact and make it so that that creature can't block. Artifacts like, for example, clues generated by your one-drop Thraven Inspector, or the Thopter, it creates itself. And on top of that, you're going to give it a pump ability too? Kids, here's the aggro deck to start with. If your deck can't beat this aggro deck, you can't beat aggro decks.
Right. I'm really a big fan of the Fleet Wheel Cruiser. He's got three copies of those. Chris Van Meter has three copies of those. It is a 5-3 for 4 mana. It has Trample and Haste, and when it enters the battlefield, it basically crews itself, so it's ready to go. And also, with a crew of only 2, most things in your deck are going to crew this thing. The Selfless Spirits already have 2 power. Then the Toolcraft Exemplar will have enough power to crew that thing should you like, because if we were talking about crewing, obviously you have an artifact, so Toolcraft Exemplar gets the pump. Thraven Inspector only has 1 power, but that's pretty much your only guy that I'm looking at that can't crew at least the Fleet Wheel Cruiser or the Smuggler's Copter. The Sky Sovereign, you have to do a little bit more work, but, I mean, honestly, it's that card is just, it's nuts. I absolutely love it.
This deck is pretty bonkers. There's no doubt about it. It's going to be the basis of what aggro will be in the new standard.
Right.
And I'm not seeing a lot of flaws in it. The fact is that Selfless Spirit takes care of the vast majority of removal you would see that this deck has to fight. I mean, where at this point you need Languish, and Languish is gone. Right. So you're down
to... You still have Grasp of Darkness, which is... Having a minus effect, we'll still get around that. But that's a pretty narrow shot for trying to get some of these artifact creatures off.
Well, that's going to get one thing. I mean, how does Control handle this deck? You can't Fumigate. I mean, you can't live long... You probably don't live long enough to Fumigate. Even if you get there, Selfless Spirit completely invalidates it. I'm not sure what Chris lost to. I'm going to assume it's that his deck hated him for a round. That's the only thing I can think of because...
Right. It had to have been, like... He lost to the dice rolls against the mirror or something like that, or just drawing a land when he didn't need to, because there are a lot of lands in this deck. This isn't your classic, you know, 17 lands and 80,000 one drops. I mean, he does go up to 5 for his curve in the main board and 4 for the Fleet Wheel Cruiser. So, I mean, he does have some guys that are all over in the curve, but it is definitely a lower-ended curve deck. And with something like this, you do have to hit your land drops, and you need to be able to hit whatever you're trying to cast, especially with something like this deck is very color-dependent. Like, we've got Dipala, who is a 2-color creature for the mana cost, so you need to have both colors ready to go by 3. Veteran Motorist is a 2-mana cost creature for 2 separate different colors of mana, so that's another one there. I mean, just kind of all over the curve, he's got... specific mana colored creatures where he's got 8 one drops or for a single white. So that's why we're going to see the planes significantly higher than all counts of the other lands. And Needle Spire is, like, I would have to say, is going to be a good card, not only just for being a dude, but it is going to be a little bit rough if, say, you have 2 lands and those are your only 2 lands in the deck. You really kind of have to, I think, with this deck, kind of jump out in front and stay there.
Also, I think one of the reasons you see a 24 land and what's ostensibly the aggro deck of the format is that Dipala offsets your flooding. With her ability, whenever she becomes tapped, you can spend X mana, look at the top X cards of your library, and put all the dwarves and vehicles that are there into your hand. That's pretty outstanding. So this is a card that's a 3-3 for 3. It pumps most of your other dudes and vehicles and is a card advantage engine.
Something else that I think is specifically important is being able to go into Dipala from Veteran Motorist. So if, say for example, you play Dipala on 3, and then next turn you play Veteran Motorist, you've got 2 that you can play him on, and then you can go swing with Dipala. So you've already scryed 2 to find some dwarves there off the scry 2 from Veteran Motorist. So you swing with Dipala, and then you just pay the other two mana, because at four, hopefully you even hit your fourth land drop, and then you're digging two more down into your deck, or just grabbing the two dudes that you left there off of the Veteran Motorist, off of his scry. That's a pretty sweet little, like, 1-2 curve type effect.
I'll tell you, the only card I look at this that are in the, it's in the main that makes me think, you know, that this looks a little shady is Harness Lightning. I mean, I know why it's there. I think we all do. If you're a one and a red and you say, kill target Looter Scooter, you're probably a card, right? But, and it obviously has a few other abilities, but you're not abusing the energy. That spot seems a little open to me. I don't know how much I like Declaration in Stone right now. Sorcery Speed removal seems a little difficult when Looter Scooters is the big aggro force that you're dealing with. I would rather have probably four Harness Lightnings and two Declaration Stones if I were going to go that split, but that's nitpicking what obviously is a fantastic deck. The sideboard's very strong. You can see he's got the four Galvanic Bombardment in there because, again, you're often going to get your Spell Mastery after board. You've got the Skywhaler's shot, which is spend three mana, scry, kill target Looter Scooter. You've got your Gideon's, you've got your Fragmentize, which says kill target Looter Scooter. Are you catching a theme here?
Yeah.
Looter Scooter is going to be the defining card of this format. If you are, one, probably need to be playing it. If you're not, you have to have a damn good reason. And you better be able to beat it and beat it quickly, because you will get buried under a mountain of card advantage.
Right. When you first said something about, you saw a card that you weren't entirely sure about, where I thought you were going to go right off the top was Declaration of Stone. Because personally, between the two of them, I give more merit to Harness Lightning. And it's part of the reason is for the reasons that you mentioned, where you've got the ability to interact at sorcery speed, or instant speed rather, as opposed to Declaration Stone, you're just stuck with it on your turn. With Declaration and Stone, you can hit something no matter how big it is, where you've got some things like Sylvan Advocate is still around, Tireless Tracker are still around. And both of those can definitely get past the range of what Harness Lightning can do, but honestly, I personally, Chris obviously has a lot more experience with this than I do, so.
Well, clearly because yeah, he did this
he
on the second
day. He won the entire event, right, so.
Yeah.
If he came up with that split of the kill spells, then, you know, I would definitely have to defer to him. But
well,
looking at it, that's what it seems.
I mean, I think his logic here is that he's worried more about things that Harness Lightning will never have a chance to kill. Your Kalidases, maybe your Elder Deep Fiends, these kind of things. I mean, Declaration of Stone definitely says bad things
Emrakul.
Go away.
Right.
Emrakul. Also, maybe looking at it to where he had to kill tokens. Maybe he was worried about green-white tokens being a thing, and maybe that wasn't a great matchup for him, and he wanted to be able to kill all of those. So there's some possibilities of other reasons why Declaration of Stone was there, but this deck has few flaws, and I've been spending time trying to dissect what I would build if I knew I were going to face this deck seven rounds in a tournament, and I'm struggling to do so.
Right.
I have a plan, but we'll get to that later.
We did kind of call shot this last week that it was going to be some kind of aggro deck that was going to take down this event. Based on what happens, or what happened this past weekend, would kind of set the pace for the format looking forward. Obviously, the top eight was riddled with a whole bunch of aggro decks, and it seems like Smuggler's Copter is kind of part of the engine that a lot of people are running in order to kind of make those aggro decks flow. I think a lot of the issues aggro decks have had in the past is that they don't have a card advantage engine. And if they do, it takes away from the deck or from what the deck's trying to do, because it's not built into a creature. Or if it is built into a creature, the creature's not necessarily good or fits what the deck's trying to do. But this deck does that. Obviously, you don't put Smuggler's Copter into a big fat deck that's full of 6/6s or 7/7s. It makes sense that it would fit into whatever this aggro shell is. Now, I want to look at this deck that made second place, which actually is this Grixis shell. It's kind of doing the opposite of what we thought what would kind of set the tone of this event. It's got big fat things in it, and obviously the guy that made this deck knew that at the beginning of every format, of course, there was just going to be aggro decks everywhere. So we packed three Kozilek's Returns into the main board. What do you guys think about this Grixis deck?
Well, I think it's sweet.
It's very sweet. I will say that this is the best Looter Scooter deck that I've seen out of all of them. Hey, don't get me wrong. It's great when you're doing cool things with vehicles. You're playing your vehicle support. But when you're taking advantage of your discard as much as this deck is,
right?
This deck, the drawing the card's not even the best part of the scooter. It's the fact you get to discard one.
Right. Being able to take your Looter Scooter and then pitch something like your prized amalgams and your haunted deads, and cast your haunted deads, discarding more prized amalgams into your graveyard to bring back the haunted dead into the field. And by the way, that's going to bring all of his little black and blue buddies with him. That's really big to me. And I think this deck is absolutely sweet. This was the one that when I first looked over what the top 8 decks were, this was the one that jumped out to me and said, hey, this is, you know, this is the thing.
Yeah.
And if we're going to look at sexiest card in the top 8, I'm going to give it to this deck, and that's going to go with Perpetual Timepiece. He ran a 2 of, because everybody knew that if you were going to break this format, clearly it would be done with Perpetual Timepiece.
Of course.
A 2-drop artifact that
they
you can
tap so deep for that.
To self-mill for 2, and then spend 2 mana sack it to take all the things that you milled that you wish were still in your deck and put them back into your deck. This is brilliant and perfect for what this deck's trying to do. Really well designed, and obviously somebody who came with it on their own. I didn't see this deck anywhere else. I don't think anybody else is playing the Grixis Looter Scooter
right.
graveyard-based
Elder Deep Fiend deck.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think this is really, really sweet, and I don't necessarily know if you would have very much time to cast this against something like the Red-White Vehicles deck like we were just talking about, but, I mean, you do have Kozilek's Return, where you're pitching Return to your yard, assuming you're not just casting it and wiping up all their early dudes anyways, but you do have quite a few different ways to actually go get Kozilek's Return and cast it out of your yard, or activate it rather, where you've got 2 Wretched Griffs and 4 Elder Deep Fiends that all just come out and say, hey, I'm going to get this Kozilek's Return back. Gee, thanks, okay, bye.
Well, yeah. I mean, the couple things that stand out too among this deck is using Scrappy Scrounger fits perfectly into a recursion graveyard-themed deck. That this is a 3/2 creature that can't block, and for 1 and a black, you can exile a creature out of your graveyard and bring it back into play. This is an outstanding card for what this deck's trying to accomplish. When I look at with this deck and I go, where does this deck go from here for improvement? Outside of its own Looter Scooters to block, it can't do much about opposing Looter Scooters. And I would imagine that might have been a problem for him at certain times during the tournament.
Well, one of the nice things about being able to cast Kozilek's Return is while it does only hit for 2, Elder Deep Fiend does have flash, so that you can instant speed cast your Kozilek's Return out of the yard to kill opposing Looter Scooters. That is an option that is there. So there is a little bit of instant speed...
flexibility.
Yeah, there's some instant speed interaction to try and catch somebody's Looter Scooters. That's not a lot, but with something like this, it's trying to pitch so much of the graveyard as quickly as it is, kind of like how Modern Dredge kind of does a bunch of that stuff. It's trying to do it so quickly that it's very consistent when it tries to do it. I think that goes a long way.
Well, and I think that's where Chris's brilliance with having the Selfless Spirit in the deck comes into play. Where it's
right.
Fantastic. Congratulations. You're going to play Kozilek's Return in this format that kills all my creatures except for the, oh, by the way, I'll sack this and my team still sticks it to you.
But that's the thing. You actually have to choose whether you're going to sack that with the trigger on the stack. First.
True. But
so,
but you know what you're going to do?
You're going to sack it. Yeah.
Right after it crewed your Looter Scooter, that sucker's
sure.
leaving the building.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, then you could just choose not to use your Kozilek's Return trigger, and then you wait for one of the next one of your 7 or 8 drops to come around to in order to kind of...
Well, this deck doesn't actually have that many of them. It only runs the 4 Elder Deep Fiend.
And it has the 2 Wretched Griffs as well.
Oh, the 2 Wretched Griffs, true. My bad.
There's actually a couple of really nice cards out of the board as well that will help to deal with some of the things that you need for instant speed interaction. There's another Kozilek's Return in the yard. There's a pair of Lightning Axe, Liliana of the Last Hope. Hopefully, if you get your Elder Deep Fiends in your yard and you're not able to really do something about it, then you can hopefully neg 2 your Liliana and get them back to be able to recast your Kozilek's Return. Maybe that's a thing. I'm not even sure if it would come in that matchup, but being able to +1 and start painting off some of the smaller white creatures out of that deck, it seems like a really good thing. And being able to kill the Veteran Motorist and plus to do it. That goes a long way.
And the Selfless Spirit as well.
Right.
So, I mean, I think Liliana's probably a key card against that deck. So we start crafting decks to beat this red-white aggro deck. I think Liliana might be a key player in such a deck.
Right. It's really weird to me, personally, to see Liliana in the sideboard. That's just not something I'm used to seeing. I'm not criticizing it by any means, but it's just seeming like, you know, one of those like main board or not things. And if it's better out of the sideboard in this deck, great. I have no problem with that.
Well,
and
I'm
honestly, this deck
it.
Just looks fun to play.
I'm going to criticize it because Lily's my beau, and
Lily is bae.
I cannot possibly have this sweetheart sitting in the sideboard, far too much power.
It seems like she's the card to go to as far as like trying to interact with these small low to the ground red white decks as well. I wouldn't be surprised to see an uptick in Liliana's in next week's meta moving forward. And not only that, but the price of Liliana to keep going up moving forward. So if you don't have Liliana of the Last Hopes yet, and you want to get in on them, I would probably pick them up.
And I would probably sell my pretty Chandra's I just cracked, because
yes,
it does not seem that Chandra is living up to her hype at this point.
There's actually another card that I've been seeing kind of climb the price charts as well, and that is a card that has come up in the green-white aggro deck that was played by both Tom Ross and Brad Nelson to pretty successful finishes, Tom just barely missing out on the top 8. There's actually only two differences in their 60s. They have the exact same split of creatures. The card that I'm referring to that I could see going up in price even more than it has been the Green Gear Hulk, Vergerous Gear Hulk. That card is absolutely fantastic. I mean, just being able to spread your counters out as well as it does is just gross.
Pretty ridiculous 5-drop. We haven't seen a 5-drop this ridiculous since Bragtusk?
Yeah, it's taking me a second to kind of think about one. Like
a green 5-drop creature.
Let's put it that way. We should get 4+1+1 counters every time he attacks, too.
Why not?
Yeah,
because it's not enough when he enters and you can blink him and whatever.
And yet, as powerful as that is, that guy comes into play roughly the turn after you've been killed by a looter scooter.
Yes.
That is actually a real thing.
Well, if you look, I think that was recognized by Tom and Brad, why you see the Servant of the Console in play. So you have actually a mana ramp creature to get you there. There's not much mana ramp going on here in this format. There's not much available to you. So having a 2-drop creature that generates 2 energy that you can tap for a mana, that's one closer to getting to, you know, dropping a turn 3 Gideon or your turn 4 Gearhulk. I'm sure that happened a lot for Tom and Brad.
So Murderous Gearhulk is really good. This deck actually does play the Fairground Warden, and I'm really, really happy about that. It plays 4 copies of that, 4 copies of Servant of the Conduit, which gives you energy, and then you can use it to make whatever color mana you want to. This deck really doesn't seem like it's quite as mana color dependent as the red-white vehicles deck. I'm seeing a lot of one specific colored mana creatures outside of the Gear Hulk. If you have just one of any color, you're good to cast most of this. With that said, you've also got 2 Aether Hubs in there to make sure that you can cast some of your Thraven Inspectors and Sylvan Advocates, you know, with the color on curve. So that's pretty important. And he also does have the Gideon Ally of Zendikar at double white. So
I'll say the thing I like that's in Tom's deck that wasn't in Brad's is the Always Watchings. The Always Watchings seem to work well with your Smuggler's Copters. I get to attack with this, I get to get the draw trigger, and then if I have another creature there, I can use it to block with and do another loot.
And loot again.
Yeah, that seems outstanding.
That's pretty awesome.
That's something I haven't seen anybody else pull. I could see Always Watching becoming a part of the red-white deck as well. When I look at some of those cards that seem maybe between Declaration Stone and Harness Lightning that were not as powerful or synergistic with the rest of the deck, I think Always Watching slides into some of those spots and becomes relatively ridiculous.
I think that's really neat, and not only was I very impressed by the addition of Always Watching, but I didn't really give a whole lot of merit to Blossoming Defense, and now that I'm seeing this in here, I don't understand why I slept on that card. It seems fantastic, and for those of you who haven't seen that card foil, by the way, it's absolutely gorgeous.
Those of you that haven't seen that card, wait for your next Modern tournament playing Infect. I'm sure you'll see a lot of it.
Oh, yeah, you'll see plenty of that, especially for those of you playing against Infect players that have foiled out their deck, because they're going to pick this one up too. Because this card, we talked about it last week on the podcast as well, because if any deck needed help in Modern, it was Infect. And that's exactly what they got, where Blossoming Defense for a single green mana pumps your dude for 2 and gives a hexproof at instant speed. That's just fantastic. And I really like being able to see that sort of effect come into play on Standard.
I'd like to bring up other decks that were played during this tournament. And we've got a lot of aggro decks. And there were a couple control decks, a black-white control deck, which is just pretty much a carryover from the last format, plus Fumigates. But the deck that really got me fired up, because it's a card I talked about during the first podcast, would be the Aetherworks Marvel. And there's a deck, the gentleman playing it, unfortunately, dropped his last few rounds, but he was in top 8 contention very, very late. The Marvel, basically the entire deck is, I'm going to get this Marvel out turn 4, I'm already going to have 6 energy in play, and I'm going to activate this sucker, and you're going to get the joyous experience of a turn 4 Emrakul or Ulamog. This is this is a thing of beauty. I appreciate the value that's going on there. There's a ton of scry effects to make sure it happens. It takes advantage of the cathartic, discard two, draw three cards. It cycles through its hand really well, cycles through its deck very quickly.
So let's talk about the deck and the engine of it and how it runs, how it works, and tell some of the people about basically what the deck does.
Okay, so what the deck's basically doing is it's playing a ton of energy generation cards. You've got 8 puzzle knots in the deck. You've got the green puzzle knot and the blue puzzle knot. Basically, the green puzzle knot comes into play, gains you 3 energy and 3 life. You spend 2 and a green, sack it, gain 3 energy, 3 life. The blue puzzle knot actually scries 2 and gives you a couple energy when it comes into play. Same thing when it leaves. So these are the engine cards of the deck. You've got Harnessed Lightnings, also other energy producers. You've got a few cards to help you search through your deck very quickly to get the Marvel, because obviously that's the card that you need. You've got 4 Vessel of Nascency, which will allow you to look through your top 4 and bin them and pull it back into your hand if it's get that Marvel back into your hand. The Cathartic Reunion, like we discussed before, these cards are going to be very powerful. The other side effect that he's got rolling in this is he's got running 3 Kozlik's Returns. So he's able to, say, turn 3, fire off a Kozlik's Return because he's running no other creatures, wipe out some of these quick aggro starts, and then plop in a Marvel, and since it's an actual cast effect that comes into play, you get to, when you use this this Marvel, you get to put your Emrakul into play, trigger your Kozlik's Return from your graveyard, wipe out a board, take their turn, or Ulamog, kill 2 of their lands after you destroy their board. I saw him on camera do it on turn 4, wiping somebody's board. It was ridiculous. Cool. Really an interesting combo deck. I've been looking at other ways to break this. I didn't see some of the ways that are being used here, some of the puzzle knots I planned on working with. But this is well thought out. Check it out. It came in, I believe, 25th. And there's another version that came in the top 64 as well that basically dropped the Harnessed Lightnings and ran the little turtles that were 0/3 for a blue that give you 2 energy as well.
That was the last card. When I was opening Kaladesh or going through the spoilers, that was the last card I thought I would ever see.
But if you think...
It totally works. I get it. But that was the last one that I looked at and saw, this is standard playable. That thought never occurred to me.
But it's nice to see people coming up with innovative, creative, combo-based decks week one. And this is the earliest version of these decks. They're only going to get better.
That was actually going to be one of my next points, was that you will always have people's best shots in the dark at trying to make whatever these decks are going to be. And that's truly what all of these are, is shots in the dark. What do we have that we think is good, do we think has some synergy, and that we think can beat whatever the other people are throwing at us? And I got to tell you, I mean, an early Ulamog at instant speed on their turn to blow up whatever they're doing, that seems like it's pretty good. So I don't know what else you could do with the cards in Standard to kind of make Aetherworks Marvel more reliable.
Well,
I don't really know.
And since I've been trying to break this card for a while, since I saw it, one of the things that jumps out at me is that, you know, yes, obviously being able to bring an Emrakul or an Ulamog or some ridiculously sized creature to play as a factor. You'll note that Marvel says a spell. It doesn't have to be a creature you're putting into play.
Right.
So there's a lot more to work with here than just play giant Eldrazi creatures.
You can also use it to instant speed Kozlik's Return. Goes a long way.
You can do that.
Obviously, Kozlik's Return is obviously an instant already, but, I mean, go into your deck to go get one. If you're playing for, like, outs type situation against some of these, like, red-white aggros.
Yeah, the only problem is you can't do it with this deck, and that's because of Emrakul. If you put an Emrakul into play on their turn, Emrakul reads that you take their turn and they get an additional turn. So basically, they get 3 turns in a row, you just get to control one of them. Probably not what you want to do with instant speed Emrakul. Now, if you know you've got an Ulamog, whole different animal. And many times you can, because there's a lot of scry effects in this deck.
Okay, so now that we've seen some of these decks, what do you guys think that some of the teams may be working on for the Pro Tour and some of the other premier level events like that we're going into? Do you think that they're going to take some of these shells, or do you think we've got something completely unique, like how Teamer Emerge came out of left field for the last Pro Tour?
I think you'll see something unique. I think what your pro level players are doing here is they're looking at, this is what they expect to see, this is what you have to beat. The aggro decks I must beat clearly are red white, red black aggro, which is also a very fast and solid deck. You've got a graveyard deck to beat. You've got a combo deck to beat. Here's some decks that are in your face that build your gauntlet, but that's all you're getting out of this. You'll see something, I think, that hasn't been laid out yet or even thought of.
So, interesting story. So, Pro Tour Kaladesh is not this weekend, but it's next weekend. Now, what's interesting about this is we all know that Star City Games, or their opens, are the events that usually a lot of people plan around when looking at deck building or when looking at kind of like shells to kind of base their decks around or to build their gauntlet around. Also, you can use Magic Online results because obviously a lot of the grinders go on there and test out their ideas. So I would venture to say like Magic Online results and Star City opens is what a lot of competitive players use to build their gauntlets. This is it as far as what's going to be on the books as far as competitive Magic, that outside of what people see for as far as information goes from Modo. So
The new set's not out on Modo yet, so there's nothing to gain from Modo as far as standard goes. You're probably going to have a standard challenge next weekend behind the modern. Standard classic behind the modern. So there's a little more feedback that's going to happen there, but that's about it. I think you're right.
Yeah.
To be fair, I don't think that many of your top-level pros, besides saying, okay, I've got a little gauntlet to work with what top eight of this tournament or what I feel are representations of the archetypes that I expect to see.
Yeah.
But that's as far as they're going to take it. I don't think that you've got your Patrick Chapins that are up late at night worrying about what the 7th place deck in Star City Open was to build his Pro Tour deck.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. I think it's kind of cool that this first Open is kind of like the gauntlet for what's going to happen. Like I said, I know a lot of the Pro Tour players are going to have their own teams and they're going to be doing all their own testing. But for all the random Joe Blows, which is makes up probably the vast majority of the Pro Tour compared to these, you know, super elite teams, are going to be basing their decks off of what happened this past weekend and kind of making their own personal tweaks or to whatever they like or whatever they didn't like based on coverage, and then kind of going from there.
Well, I'll tell you, and this brings up what you're expecting to see at the Pro Tour. I think that's what we're leading to. And I will tell you this, you know, from years and years and years of doing this kind of stuff, playing a lot of Magic and being in Pro Tours, you can look at what everybody expects the format to be and then tilt it 3 degrees towards control, because pro players love playing control and the higher level pros generally love playing more control. We have not seen a dominant control deck at this tournament. That top eight was all aggro, depending on what you consider the Grixis Emerge deck.
Yeah,
that one kind of seems to me like I'd throw that under the mid-range.
Combo, aggro, goofiness.
I mean, honestly, you could put that in probably about 3 different buckets.
It sure as hell isn't control. Yeah. So,
it's definitely not control.
Right, and the only thing I saw that was moderately control was a ported black-white deck that threw in some Fumigates and call it a day. I mean, it wasn't drastically different. I would probably look to see where you're going to build your control decks from. In my mind, Grasp of Darkness is the best Looter Scooter answer.
Right. It has to start with black because of Liliana, right?
I think it has to start there because of Grasp, really. Yeah. If you consider Looter Scooter to be the pillar of this format, and 32 copies in the top eight of the first event tells me this is the pillar of the format,
sure.
You must figure out what the best way to remove this card is, and it has to be at least at par. So they're spending 2 mana, you're spending 2 mana as an instant. That works, and your card has value above and beyond that, particularly against this deck. It kills everything. Sure.
Yeah.
So I think you're starting with Grasp. Now, where you go from there, Liliana seems pretty amazing. That card rarely can be bad. Maybe you're looking at a heavy Planeswalker version. I don't know if we're looking at Esper with like a Dovin Bond, you know, type base. I don't know. That climbs up to Sorin. Are we looking at white for Fumigate? Yeah. Well, I think Fumigate is the best sweeper printed since, say, Supreme Verdict. Cards like Selfless Spirit, which all the aggro decks have white, and they're probably all going to have Selfless Spirit, at least in the board, makes any Wrath type effect of that nature that doesn't apply a minus X effect to be pretty suspect.
Something I thought was interesting too is both of the green-white aggro decks that both Tom Ross and Brad Nelson were running this weekend had Fumigates in the sideboard. So you can tell that those guys are starting to try and hedge to be able to beat some of the green-white vehicle decks and some of the faster aggro decks that inevitably pop up anytime you have a new format come out. And they've also got Linvala the Preserver that will hopefully come down and be able to end up with a lot of comeback power. And it also gives you a 3/3 Angel token as well, ideally, against that deck that you'd be able to hopefully trade a Looter Scooter into. Or at least gum up the air to do it.
And that brings to some of the things you maybe look to see. I mean, you've got a few pretty powerful, relatively low-costed white flying Lifelinkers, which is a thing. I mean, if you think about it, you don't get a Looter Scooter through a Gisela anytime soon. You know what I mean? These are challenges. So these are the kind of cards you look at. You've got the 2-3 flying vigilance lifelink guy. While he doesn't do much in a looter scooter world,
the dwarven nighthawk.
Right, exactly. He doesn't do that much in a looter scooter world. He still has some value, perhaps, in those decks. I could see maybe something based around the spirit deck that we saw. Maybe a port of that that makes it from there as an aggro control deck against these aggro decks. That's the direction I could see some of these decks going. Because you have some decent counter backups. Although I'm not particularly thrilled about taking miscalculation, make it not affect artifacts, and call that the best counterspell in the format. It's what they have to work with.
One of the cards I saw that I think is going to be one of my big draws into playing green in the upcoming standard, as far as sideboards are concerned, is Natural State. And when I was kind of going over some of the top 8 decks and top 10, 16, 32, whatever, some of the cards that just popped out to me were in the main deck, but the one that specifically said, hey, this is the card, was Natural State out of the sideboards. And that's going to pop up and nail any of the little looter scooters, being that they are 3 mana cost or less. At instant speed for a single mana, that card is going to go a long way.
Pure value right now. I think that's a fantastic card. It doesn't hit your other vehicles, though. The 5
ones. Yeah. It doesn't, but honestly, if I'm trying to hedge against some of the artifact vehicles, the one that I think I'm really trying to go for is going to be the scooter.
I agree. I think anytime you're going to be able to move a looter scooter at value, where you're actually, at half mana what they cost to play the looter scooter, you're probably doing well. Right. The problem with Natural State that I see, and while it's got some other upsides, it hits You're Always Watching, for example, that kind of thing. It'll hit any enchantment-based removal spells. And I think enchantments are due for a comeback Stasis here spears. Now that we're in a world that no longer has a Dromoka's Charm. Or Demoka's Command. That's a thing. That being said, I don't see enough value with a Natural State compared to a card like, say, Grasping Darkness, which does all of that and several bags of chips.
Right. It's hard to jam a double black spell in a deck that's quite trying to do the same thing that the green-white aggro deck is. Obviously, you're not going to just stick a double black card in here for, like, a black splash. But I think for the role it is trying to fill, Natural State is absolutely fantastic. And both Brad and Tom are running Fragmentizing the board to hopefully be able to not only tag any of the enchantments that may come up over the course of the weekend, like any sort of keep your dude tap type enchantments or fevered visions, that sort of thing. That card's able to take care of those. Plus, you're able to hit some of the fleet wheel cruisers of the world, any sort of those things. They won't hit any of the Gear Hulks, and Fragmentize also will not hit the Sky Sovereign. But outside of that, Fragmentize will go a long way and do a lot of work for the small investment that you're making.
Well, and the only difference is that Fragmentizes a sorcery and hits artifacts one bigger, and enchantments one larger. So that's
being able to tag enchantments too, I think, is something that's going to be absolutely critical moving forward, because I personally think enchantments are going to be on the rise.
They've been suppressed for so long. I mean,
exactly.
Dromoka's Command made it so that, I mean, you would build decks and go, well, as long as Company's the most dominant deck, and it is, and it got so inbred. There was no reason to play an enchantment because everybody you would face, you'd play in an 8-round tournament, and 6 people would be playing some sort of Bant Company with 4 Dromoka's Commands. So that you stop playing them. I definitely think they're due for a comeback. If you're looking at a control deck, if I were going to build a control deck right now, let me try to build something, I'd probably start with Black Blue, you got your Grasp of Darknesses, and maybe go towards Metallurgic Summoning.
I could see that. Now, when Metallurgic Summonings got spoiled, I immediately read that and was like, this is fantastic. This is nuts. And that is a 5 mana cost enchantment, which does not get fragmentized. There's not really a whole lot of ways that you can really interact with that card. So you can just hit 5, drop it, and then assuming it resolves and assuming you're not just like dead to a crackback off of a bunch of small dudes, that's awesome. So if you put it in, say, like some sort of blue-black shell, you could instant speed Grasp of Darkness one of theirs, say, a looter scooter or something, and then make a 2-2 off that, and then block their veteran motorist, and now you've taken out 2 resources for 1.
I don't think that anybody who would design such a deck, if you get to that point where you untap with that card, you're not losing that game.
I would think it would be really hard to, assuming you were able to dodge Flood and that sort of thing. Which there are scry effects out there to be able to fit into that sort of deck, like you've got Live Fast, for example. And maybe if you were to put more things, say, with clues in there. Say if you went blue-green for like a mid-range version with Tireless Tracker to try to be able to hit some of your land drops and then use those to gum up the board while you waited to hit your metallurgic summonings and then try and use the clue tokens to shift some of your lands away. That sort of deal, I think, would be what really kind of puts that over the top.
You might even find cards like Take Inventory get playable in such an environment. I mean, it's really depends on how far you can push summonings. And can you get to that point? I think you've got to overcommit to removal in such an environment. Your black removal's got to be all over the place. And you do have the Kingpin now in a black-blue deck. This is a 1/4 creature with lifelink that gives you a scry when you play an artifact. Now, that's a big butt, and I cannot lie.
Hmm. All you other brothers can't get past that guy.
Radio edit.
So now that we've talked enough about standard, let's move on to the next older format being modern. What do you guys see coming up for GP Dallas? What are you playing? What are you expecting to see? Talk to me.
Well, we've already kind of talked about what we were going to play at GP Dallas this past...
Now, we did, but you have made a change.
Last week.
Or at least you're looking.
That's not necessarily meaning that I'm going to make a change, but I did want to kind of talk about the GP trial that we played in this past weekend and kind of how things went at that for, I guess, the each of us. I brought Jeskai Nahiri to the event, and I played my worst matchup round one, and which was Tron. And it's kind of weird. When playing against Tron, you always have to make him draw it. Just like playing against any other deck that has a big fat top end to it, they may draw just all air and not have the big finisher card to finish you off. And that's basically what happened with my round one. My opponents got Tron online very easily. Just so happened that I had like Remand, Snapcaster Remand, Remand some more, and then Nahiri with Remand backup. And I basically just rode my Remands in for the win for basically games one and two. And then round two, they had a weird meta at the GPT we went to. I played against Turns, and the idea for the Turns deck wasn't to kill me with a big 8-8 or to play a Laboratory Maniac and just ride out the rest of the game. The guy tried to mill me out. I'm playing an Emrakul deck, and he tried to mill me out. So this is how game one happened. He plays 2-drop Jace. He gets 2-drop Jace up to ult. He ults the thing. And he starts to mill me out through various effects of target you with this, or like play a Serum Visions or play a Time Warp type card. And then I would mill 5 off of his Jace triggers. Well, I have Emrakul in my deck. What eventually ended up happening is I had 19 cards left in my deck. He flipped my Emrakul. I announced my Emrakul trigger. And then he played enough instants and remands to basically mill out my deck from 19 cards and then activated a land that made us both draw a card in order to end the game. Games 2 and Games 3 did not go like that. I boarded into basically all of my aggro package and burned him out and killed him very quickly. Now, my third match, I lost to Burn, which is weird because I thought Burn was kind of a good matchup for Jeskai Nahiri. I had some Lightning Helixes in the main board, some Rest for the Wearies that I know I talked about last week. So I thought that would be a great matchup. But like I said, in any matchup of Magic, like I said about Tron earlier, you have to draw it. You got to draw your sideboard cards, you have to draw your outs, you have to draw your good cards of your deck that kind of make your deck function, and I didn't draw the cards. So it overly frustrated me with the deck, and it made me want to play more of a streamlined deck that kind of just goes all in and does what the deck's supposed to do. One of my biggest fan ideas of Magic is there are no wrong threats. There's only wrong answers. And it feels like playing the Jeskai Nahiri deck, in a lot of cases, I would have just the wrong answers and my opponents would have the right threats. So I kind of want to change up what I'm doing in Modern. I want to play a threats deck instead of an answers deck and then just make my opponent have to have it. So, and then kind of go from there. Let's see, I also, after losing to Burn, like I said, I didn't draw my sideboard cards. I lost to 8-Rack, which that matchup is just completely miserable. My opponent killed me at 1 life with a smallpox. which I know is near and dear to your heart, Chuck. But yeah, it killed me at one life with the smallpox, and I was about ready to leave the building.
Well, I played that same event. I played the ABRAC. And Tom, if you're listening, yes, I played the Gemstone Caverns, and every time I played Gemstone Caverns on it, as a turn zero effect, it made my toes curl. It was fantastic. Tom and I have had an ongoing discourse about whether that card goes in that deck, and it does. I went undefeated in the preliminary rounds. I drew into top eight. My one tough match was against a very interesting black-red Eldrazi deck that did very strange things and had a Liliana and wiped out a bunch of my rack effects with a Cyborg Ratchet Bomb, and we had interesting games, but I killed four people with a smallpox and they were at one, so that made my life very, very happy. I made it in the top eight and as the first seed and played the eight seed, which was the Turns deck. Now, if you want to talk about a matchup that isn't fun, if you're a discard-based deck going against a deck with four Ancestral Visions, eight Howling Mine effects, and numerous Time Walk effects on top of all that, that didn't go as well as I would have hoped. I ended up getting him to five and getting him to one in two separate games when he miracled a Temporal Mastery in both of those games and just took himself out of reach. So I had to settle for a top eight and done.
I absolutely did not do very well this tournament. I'm pretty sure that I played against every burn deck in Texas. And so I went in there with Grixis Delver, and that apparently, as I exactly figured, has a really tough matchup against burn. It's not completely unwinnable, but it's really, really tough. So you kind of have to have the right counter spells for the right things and the right kill spells and just hope to be able to mess with, you know, hope that your hand lines up exactly right with what they're trying to do and be able to get in there with your appropriately colored lands while taking the least amount of damage to do it, which is easy enough to say that that's kind of what you're trying to do with every deck, but as Grixis Delver is, it is a very, very mana-color-dependent deck, so you kind of have to find yourself shocking here and fetching there, so you're losing a pretty significant amount of life points to yourself, and it's kind of made me want to go down on a fetch land, go to, say, like, one Bloodstained Mire, currently I'm running two in my 20-land deck, and go up on one of the other fast lands, maybe another Spire Bluff Canal that just came out, or go up on a Darkslake Shore. So being able to have access to more of the fast lands so you're doubled up on the ability to get in your lands for no life cost goes a long, long way in that matchup.
Well, so I've got a question. I mean, we're all trying here. I mean, our big focus now is Grand Prix Dallas. That's the next big tournament in our area, and we're all striving hard and challenging ourselves to do better this tournament. Ian, what are you going to play, and how are you
going to
do?
I'm going to play Grixis Delver, and I am going to crush everybody that I play against on day one. That's what I'm going to do. So I'm going in there with two buys, and so that means that I'm only going to have to win a few games to actually get there. I'm going to have to wind up winning four matches to get to a 6-3 record to make day two. So I'm going to do it, so long as I don't play burn every single round like we did in the GPT in Texas, then we'll be just fine. So
Terry, what are you going to play and how are you going to do?
Well, you know, like I said, I'm looking at moving into a more streamlined strategy. Playing an answers deck is frustrating. Like I said, when you draw the wrong half of your answers versus deck X, Y, or Z. So I'm going to play a more streamlined getcha deck. I first looked at burn. I don't like burn. There's so many people that overly prepare for burn. So I'm looking at Death Shadow decks. I only have a month to prepare, and I know we talked about this last week, but Death Shadow is a deck with a lot of lines to it that's very good, and I have a lot of lines that I need to learn. So I need to jam games, and if there's any help or advice anybody else could give just about lines to use with the deck, you guys could leave comments on whatever Facebook thread I'm sure we'll leave this podcast in, and I will read probably all of them.
And by that, Terry means email us at theforcespike@gmail.com. That's what Terry was getting at.
Clearly that's what he meant.
That's what he meant.
I'm going to go on a limb right here, and this is what I'm going to say. I'm going to play ABRAC. I'm going to play with a Gemstone Caverns in it because I like Gemstone Caverns and it's very good in the deck. And I'm going to qualify for my 10th Pro Tour at this Grand Prix. Mm. The end.
Yeah.
Seems good. Mm. Seems good. Those are the high goals that we set for ourselves. And something that I personally have been trying to work on as a player is set higher goals for myself and try to achieve them. And it's not necessarily just with my win record, but how did I do in those games? Were these games that I had to rely on a top deck in both games, like 1 and 3, to be able to close out because I punted about 8 times when my opponent couldn't close? I want to be able to say that I took that game, and that's kind of what I've been working on more so than anything else, is kind of keeping the small mistakes down, not fetching in appropriate times, not fetching if I don't need to, learning especially the interaction with fetch lands and Serum Visions as it is. Typically speaking, want to crack your fetch land before you Serum Visions. That way you don't Serum Visions, find something good on top of your deck off the scry to, and then all of a sudden you have to spell snare something and you have to crack your fetch to go in there and get it. So learning a bunch of the interactions is something that I've put a lot of time into lately, and I think that's critical for pretty much anybody who wants to achieve any level of success to be able to do. I think a lot of it just comes to repetition and doing homework and talking to other people, like Terry said, that you want to be able to find somebody who knows how to play the deck, who plays it well, and be able to kind of pick their brain a little bit. That goes a long way.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's a lot of lines to actually playing Serum Visions. We could probably talk about this for an hour. As far as, like, playing Serum Visions correctly, I see a lot of people just run out their turn one or turn two Serum Visions, crack a fetch land, and then waste their 2 scries that either went to the bottom or top bottom or whatever. You decrease the chances of quality draws out of your deck by doing this, which usually turns into kind of like a catch-22 for me when making my land drops when I have Serum Visions in hand. It's either A, yes, go ahead and Serum Visions before cracking your fetch to see what you draw, or B, go ahead and crack your fetch, hope that whatever you Serum Visions doesn't matter whether that land comes into play tapped or untapped. There's some catch to playing it. If I would glean anything from my extensive time of playing Jeskai Nahiri, just save them. You don't always have to blow your Serum Visions on turn one or turn two unless you're hungry for mana, which that's what I would think other experienced players would learn from any random player playing a Serum Visions on turn one or turn two, would be, hey, this guy is looking for mana, because otherwise, what are you looking for in your deck unless you're playing some kind of weird wonky combo deck? Because, like I said, if you Serum Visions on one, what are you really looking for if you're not looking for mana?
I'm going to agree 100% with you, Terry. I see that happen all the time, that people will fire up that Serum Visions as soon as possible holding a Thought Scour. Do you even know, game one, turn one, what are you Serum Visioning for? Do you know what you need?
Right.
If it's mana, if I see somebody do it and it's a quality player I'm playing against, yes, I'm going to believe that guy probably doesn't have a second mana source. He's trying to go find it. Right. Otherwise, there is no reason, until you know what it is that you want to scry for, to fire that.
What you're looking for.
Exactly.
That's been one of the things that I've had to learn with this Grixis Delver deck as well, is the more I've played it, the more I've seen that you kind of really want to hold it until you know that you're going to use it for a specific reason. Now, I have used it because I know I'm trying to get one more card in my deck, or in my graveyard for Delve, but unless you're using it for a specific reason like that, it's better off to hold it to be able to filter through some of the late game effects once you get to the end game or the later game against a deck like Jund, where it's inevitably going to wind up being who has what resource and who can stop the other person from doing thing X. And Serum Visions is one of the best ways to ensure that you're able to do that, because you can ship 2 of your lands off the top and then go find a Snapcaster and a Terminate or something like that. Whatever it is you're needing to do, you can do it if you hold off certain cards. And that's one of the things that so many people need to learn, is not just, and myself included in this, is not just learning how to play a deck, but learning how to play specific cards in that deck. Because there are so many things that are universal with the way you have to use certain resources, like a Serum Vision, because you're going to use it the same way in Grixis Delver as you will Jeskai Nahiri.
I think that, to summarize what you're saying, be patient. It's okay. Even in a format where turn 4 kills are what the average is, you can be a little patient at times with certain cards in your deck. You don't always have to spend every mana all the time. Yes, you'd like to be able to do that optimally when it's leading towards the path you want to go. But many times, that Serum Image is better off in your hand when you need to see what's going on. Because, hey, if they drop a turn one Death Shadow because they just put themselves down to 11, that's a whole lot different than when they played a Celestial Colony turn one. And the card I'm going to be scrying for is probably going to be radically different depending on what that is.
So one of the last topics we want to get into here, the new thing that everybody's been kind of talking about a little bit, and that's going to be the Frontier format. This is something that's been picking up a lot of steam, specifically over in Japan, and it is a new format, quote-unquote. It is constructed, and it is basically supposed to be like postmodern. Whenever you look at what modern is, it cuts off cards that don't have a certain border. It goes back to 8th edition when they updated the border there. That's basically what Haruruya is trying to do and go back to the M15 set once they had the blacked off bottom of the cards. Anything that shows up in M15 and forward is in this new Frontier / postmodern format, and it's starting to pick up a lot of steam over there. I'm not really sure how much merit I give this. I think it'd be fun, but I kind of almost see it being more like a Tiny Leaders sort of pauper. I don't really have much else to do, but I'm going to play this format because I can kind of thing. I could see it being a lot of fun. I could see it doing some interesting things as far as finance goes, being that it changes, you know, the price of cards dropping after they rotate out of standard, assuming they're not strong enough to see modern play. They can hold on to 60, 75, whatever percent of the value for an extended period of time. But I just don't see this as a format being something big. What do you guys think?
I agree with you. I don't think this is necessarily a format that's going to catch on until it gets competitive level support. If it got that, much like Modern has, I think you'd start seeing it. But people are into that. Join the crowd like Commander people did, so that all those old Legends cards that I have stuffed in the back of a closet retain far more value than they're actually worth.
Yeah, I do have a mild amount of interest in this format, and that's really just because I get to play with Goblin Rabble Master again. I really do miss that card. I want to jam it in Modern so badly, but I just can't quite get it there. I miss playing with that guy. He's awesome. I will not miss Siege Rhino in Standard / Frontier. Yeah. I'm going to completely be over that. I played it in Modern, and it was great there. I loved it, but not so much in something like this. So, what do you think?
It was clearly a very good card for you, leading to a significant amount of success.
Yeah. So, Terry, what do you think about this format?
I think there's been a lot of different rumors about new formats coming out. There was the one about the not-so-restricted list being a format. The non-reprint list cards being on a format, and that didn't really pan out. So I don't know. Like I said, there's been a lot of different rumors of different formats, people making up their own formats and hoping that they catch steam. Until Wizards actually catches an eye to it and actually turns it into, say, a PTQ or a GP format, then I don't see it really being a thing into the future. Now, Team Modern, which Wizards picked up on, which there's a Grand Prix in San Antonio coming up later next year, I think that's awesome. I like that format. I wish we could practice that format, but...
You can. You play Infect, Affinity, and Burn, and there you go.
There you go. Well, here's the thing. We don't have enough of like a local player base with enough of diversified cards in order to play team-level events without having, like, I don't know, maybe like two or three teams, I guess. But
Really not enough diversity in our metagame unless you feel like playing, you know, the... three Burn players in the three Tron players.
Which, you can't do that because you can only have four of a card amongst the three of you in your team.
Oh, well,
that's fun. So, yeah, that makes it fun. It's going to be an awesome Grand Prix in San Antonio, and I'm looking forward to it next year. We should go to that.
I think we'll go to that.
I would totally go to that.
Because you know what? Yeah. I'm still playing 8-Rack.
All right.
Well, I would let you because I'm not using any of those guns.
None of my guards would overlap unless I'm playing Bishop.
No one else is allowed to use smallpox but me. That's the rule.
That's entirely fair. That's pretty sure that we won't want to.
No.
You say that.
Blah!
Now, I might be interested in Inquisition.
But it's entirely possible that while I'm playing in a top 8, you'll be on a food run. I'm just saying.
I'm going to run. rub my hands all over every one of your match slips.
Oh gosh,
it's going to happen.
Here's a match slip.
You know, one of these days, I'm actually, when I finally win a match at a GP, I'm going to turn my match slip into you guys, and you guys.
Oh yeah, we'll have to take pictures of you holding your match slip because that'll be the only one you've ever carried.
Yeah, you guys can jump in a fire. Anyways, I think that's going to be about it for this episode.
if we jump in a fire, it won't be one that started with your winning match slips. That's for damn sure.
No, it's going to be started with Madcap Extremis. Because as we covered last week, that card is good for a lot of that, including starting fires.
Well, truly, it's also good for bringing Platinum Imperium into play.
Mm. Yeah,
but...
We're not talking about that. We're just done with this podcast. Strangely enough,
this podcast actually ended about 5 minutes ago, and Ian's going to delete all of this.
There's so much that's getting deleted out of this. There's so many pauses and ums and uhs and whatever. Actually, what I'm saying right now is going to get deleted out of this podcast.
It probably should be.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to this week's episode of the Forspike Podcast. Again, my name is Ian. Joining me today were Cherry. If you have any sort of input for us, if you have any sort of suggestions, if you'd like to hear us talk about anything specifically, you can always get a hold of us at theforspike@gmail.com. So, once again, thank you all for joining us this fine, lovely day, and we will see you next time. Say bye, Chuck.
Thank you very much, and goodbye.
That was weak. Terry.
Sasquatch.
Cherry.
Thank you, and have a great day.
All right. Bye.
Bye.